On the night of July 19th, 1952, note that date, astronomers working at Mount Palomar Observatory's 48-inch Ocean-Schmidt camera telescope were imaging areas of the sky as part of an extensive survey of the Northern Hemisphere heavens. As many huge aperture astronomical telescopes are, this type of telescope is designed very specifically to be an astronomical camera, at the time imaging on glass photographic plates coated in silver salts. In those days, this telescope was state-of-the-art, having only been commissioned 4 years before. This telescope is still in service today in a much upgraded and modernized configuration, and has made a number of important discoveries in its history, including the minor planets Sedna and Eris, among others. During its lifetime as a photographic plate camera, this telescope accumulated an archive of no less than 19,000 photographic plates that had accumulated and then languished in a basement at Caltech for decades. A volunteer group recently went through and conserved the plates and digitized them, and they are now available for astronomers to study astronomical images taken decades ago. The preservation of old sky survey plates is something that proved important in the Tabby Star study, itself still nominally a candidate for a technosignature of alien origin. Old plates preserve a record of events from long ago, even in astronomy. On that July night at 8:52 p.m., an image was taken of an area of the sky at the celestial coordinates, right ascension, 21 hours, 18 minutes, 10.4 seconds, declination plus 50 degrees, 22 arc minutes, 43.4 arc seconds near Cygnus, not visually far from Tabby Star, followed up by a second image of the same area about 1 hour later at 9:52 p.m. This was done to provide data in two different wavelengths of light, one in red, the other blue, using filters. These types of plates are incredibly useful on a number of fronts, but one area where these kinds of sky surveys are of interest is in the study of transients. The night sky may look static, but on close inspection, it sometimes isn't. Stars can change in brightness. Variable stars can be intrinsically variable and pulsate and change brightness often on predictable timescales like clocks. They can also do it irregularly. Stars can also dramatically change in brightness with no warning, such as a red dwarf flaring and suddenly growing in brightness, or dust moving in front of a star causing it to dim. And of course, Betelgeuse's recent naked eye visible dimming when it expelled a cloud of gas and dust. But the searches for these kinds of variable stars tended to be on relatively long timescales. It took Betelgeuse weeks to do what it did, and even longer to recover. And other known types of variability in stars, such as supernovae, tend to last in terms of months to a year. What hasn't been looked into too extensively until now are very rapid transits that last less than a day. So plates like the Palomar plates, taken within hours of each other, offer a unique opportunity to try to catch astronomical events that persist only for timelines of hours, a cadence which may give insights on astrophysical phenomena that we are currently totally unaware of. The problem with this kind of work, however, with modern telescopes and images is that satellites really confound searches for astrophysical transients. There are all sorts of issues, from solar panels glinting to satellite point sources that appear and disappear in modern photography along with tracks. So the idea is to focus on plates like those of Mount Palomar, taken before the launch of Sputnik in 1957, when there were no satellites in orbit. So far, this has proven interesting and quite enigmatic. In a paper by Enrique Solano and colleagues, they report the discovery of one such transient in the Palomar plates from the night of July 19, 1952. But it's weird. In this case, the first plate, taken an hour before the other, shows what appears to be a cluster of three star-like points. Not just one, three clustered together. In variable stars, variability is something inherent to the star itself. It's a point source, usually distant from anything else. So if it sees a flare or something, it's due to the star itself doing something. In this case, it was a cluster of three star-like points that appeared on the plate very close to each other. These appear to be stars in every way, fixed in the sky as stars are, without motion over the time of the photographic exposure. But here's the kicker. An hour later, they were gone, or had dimmed below the threshold of the telescope's detectability, which was something like magnitude 21. This is weird. Whatever those points were, they either vanished or dimmed dramatically, to a degree far more than most astrophysical processes can do. The researchers involved know what things like flaws and damage to these kinds of plates look like, and these do not appear to be that. Nor is contamination from nuclear testing likely, which can affect plates of that era, but not likely in this case. That does not appear to be what this is. Rather, they look like a group of three bright, meaning 15th magnitude, stars on the plate. Bright in context, but these would not have been visible to the naked eye at the time. Just normal stars in an astrophotography plate, which is probably why no one at Palomar at the time noticed them, but then they simply disappeared without a trace an hour later. This should not be. A group of three probably unrelated stars all next to each other, from our perspective, should not up and disappear or dim out of view that rapidly. The problem is, with a single variable star, you shouldn't see it as a cluster of three stars that are there 1 hour and not the next. Subsequent attempts using modern instruments to see if these point-like transients have ever returned have come up with nothing. They're still gone. Though if they are turning on and off periodically, we wouldn't see that in just a few images. You'd have to catch them at the right time, which may be possible with coming telescopes like the Vera C. Rubin Observatory, where it's expected that all manner of short transients will be detected each day. Catching flashes of light, no matter the origin, will be something this dedicated survey telescope will be able to do. Another mystery is that if these objects were unrelated stars, the nature of the speed of light should prevent them from all turning off at once. The points of light were all within 10 arc seconds of each other, if they were individual objects. And we're talking about an hour here, so causality in the speed of light constrains them to less than 6 astronomical units apart from each other. This is very strange indeed, because it would also mean that these sources were close. Very close. The maximum distance to account for them is 2 light years. That's not all. The minimum distance that they could have been at is in the orbit of Earth. Remember that date, July 19th, 1952. One can play with ideas of a relatively close-knit group of Kuiper Belt objects, or further out. 2 light years gets into the territory of material mixing with that of Alpha Centauri, reflecting some kind of transient bright light source, like a flash in the outer solar system. But the chances of that aren't good, and what that far out could do it. There really isn't anything there that we know of, so it remains a mystery. But this would account for the fact that the objects no longer appear in that area of the sky. Solar system objects move in their orbits over time. But it doesn't account for why they didn't appear in the second plate an hour later. Things don't move that fast, especially that far out there. Another option floated by the authors is that of some kind of gravitational lensing effect. The idea is that some massive object in the foreground, such as a stellar mass black hole, very briefly lensed and magnified a background object that is too dim for our telescopes to normally see. This, however, is fraught with problems. Not the least of which is that it dimmed too quickly to plausibly be that, along with other variables needed for it to come together just so. It basically requires some sort of astronomical event, like a visual component of a fast radio burst, to happen just at that exact time as to be lensed, which is really unlikely. This may put this one into technosignature territory, but close technosignature territory. Look for a discussion of the strangeness of this transient this Thursday on Event Horizon, where the guest will be one of the co-authors of the new paper, Dr. Beatrice Villarroel, which includes discussion of all of these prospects. So far as technosignatures, there are two possibilities that can be considered here. One is the exhaust of a close-by photon rocket, but that should be significantly more obvious. One that close would be a bright night sky object, to say the least. The other is a bit more tricky but relevant, and now we're in weird territory. But all things must be considered. More on that in a bit. It's also worth noting that this is not the only time that this has happened. In other photographic plates, a series of 9 transient events in similar circumstances happened on April 12, 1950, that remain unexplained and may represent examples of the same phenomenon. Links to papers on these incidents also in the description. But there was also a very strange incident of a transient reported by Villarroel and colleagues found also in the Palomar plates, which appears to have been an object, in scientific terms a population of high albedo objects in orbit of Earth, but in other words, a satellite tracking across a plate 7 years before the launch of Sputnik and the beginning of the satellite age. That too remains a mystery. I reiterate, links to all papers in the description. See the science of this for yourself. So whatever these transients represent remains unknown, nor is it known if they are related. And there are going to be a lot more of them coming down the pike in coming years, with advanced survey telescopes coming online. The good news is that further research can be done here, and is being done, to get to the bottom of these disappearing stars. But in the interest of providing a complete picture, I would be remiss if I didn't note what else was reported on July 19, 1952. Remember, the closest distance for this trio of transients was in orbit of Earth. On that night, about 11:40 p.m. local time at Washington National Airport, Washington, D.C., air traffic controller Edward Nugent detected seven objects appearing on his radar. There were no known aircraft in that area, which was about 15 miles south of D.C., probably somewhere due south of Alexandria, and they were not following established flight paths. Nugent's boss, Harry Barnes, joined him at the radar scope, and they watched the radar returns together for a time. And they both noted that the movements of the objects were erratic and far outside of what aircraft could do in the 1950s, or for that matter today. The radar system was checked by two other ATC operators and found to be working normally, and by this time there were at least four controllers watching the radar scope. So they called their airport's control tower that had another separate radar for verification. Two controllers there, however, were also watching the same blips, but from a higher vantage point in the tower, and had spotted a corresponding bright light in the sky that hovered and moved around at incredible speed. Then, even more objects appeared all over both radar screens, even passing uncomfortably near the White House. This prompted the controllers to contact Andrews Air Force Base, 10 miles away. This is a problematic area of the story, in that Andrews did not initially see these objects on radar, but an airman on base visually spotted one, describing it as an orange ball of fire that took off at improbably high speed. On the runway of Washington National was a DC-4 pilot waiting to be cleared for takeoff. He spotted something he thought was a meteor, and might have been, but was then alerted by the controllers of something, whatever they were seeing on the radar, was heading towards him. He then saw six fast-moving lights, with no apparent flight surfaces he could discern. The controllers and the pilot were able to corroborate what he saw corresponded to what they were seeing on the radar. These then streaked off at high speed. By this point, objects were being picked up at Andrews Air Force Base as well, and both locations simultaneously picked up an object that appeared to be hovering over a radio beacon. This involved three separate radars, and all three saw it vanish at the same time. At 3 a.m., a pair of F-94 Starfire military jets moved into the area, and all of the objects promptly vanished from the radars, leading the head controller, Harry Barnes, to suspect that the objects were monitoring radio traffic and actively responding to it as though they understood it. The objects were last detected at 5:30 a.m. and vanished at sunrise. There were several other events in July 1952, including one report of a sighting at the Hanford Nuclear Facility, which is where the United States at the time was manufacturing nuclear weapons materials in the state of Washington on the West Coast. Again, on the night of July 26th, personnel on a commercial plane spotted a light from the windows of the aircraft, and again, radars at Washington National and Andrews Air Force Base were tracking more unknown objects. As it unfolded, the objects were detected everywhere on the radars, some moving slowly, some moving an estimated 7,000 miles per hour. Again, jets were scrambled at about 11:30 p.m. One jet saw nothing when it moved into what should have been visual range of some of the objects on the radar, but his wingman did see four white lights and chased them, apparently below 1,000 feet, but couldn't catch up to them at maximum speed. Later that night, two more jets were scrambled. Again, one saw nothing, the other saw a white light, along with a number of reports from civilian aircraft of lights corresponding to targets seen on the radar at Andrews. Then, as the sun rose, all contacts vanished. The apparently numerous different radar operators felt that the returns were too strong for weather phenomenon and that they appeared to be solid objects. In the end, the incident made U.S. national headlines and even caught the attention of U.S. President Harry Truman. The CIA became concerned, and the Air Force held a press conference reiterating that incidents like this were not a threat to national security, with the whole thing pinned on temperature inversions. something that was disputed by the witnesses and radar operators for many years after. We'll very likely never know what that was. So there's the story. As an open-minded skeptic of an alien origin for UFOs, there's not much I can do with a UFO incident that happened over 70 years ago. Those UFOs are long gone, and we can't set up equipment and take measurements from a modern perspective. I make no judgments, though. I believe those people saw something and legitimately didn't know what it was. But what I do find strange is that a photographic plate uncovered 7 decades later showed something anomalous on that very night, though granted Washington DC and Palomar are on opposite sides of the country. Anyway, puzzling at least. So you tell me, what do you think on that strange summer night of July 19th, 1952, the Schmidt camera at Mount Palomar Observatory caught on film? Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently Halloween level spooked. It's like October and December. I have to wonder though, if something like the 1952 flap happened today, and wasn't just a bunch of sightings but included a modern CCD image from a major telescope, what would happen? I'm not really sure, but it would be interesting indeed, and be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.